A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one to close out our inventory marking series. He's asking about the nightmare of cable identification. You've got a bin full of XLRs, RCAs, 3.5mm cables, display cables, network cables, and you need the right one fast. The surfaces are tiny, curved, and flexible. What marker actually survives? And how do you store long cables so they're findable without becoming a tangled disaster? This is the problem every sound engineer lives with, and honestly, most of them are still getting it wrong.
They absolutely are, and the stakes are higher than people realize. The Audio Engineering Society ran a survey, I want to say 2023, and found that 68% of live sound engineers report losing at least 30 minutes per show due to unlabeled or poorly labeled cables. That's half a show's sound check gone because you grabbed the wrong XLR.
30 minutes per show. That's the musical equivalent of beige wallpaper. You don't notice it until someone points out the room's being beige the whole time.
If you're doing a festival run, that's hours across a tour. So the question isn't really, should I label my cables? It's why is everyone doing it wrong, and what actually works?
Let's start with the obvious thing everyone tries first.
The Great Deceiver. Here's what's happening chemically. Standard permanent markers use solvent-based ink. Cable jackets, especially PVC and PUR, contain plasticizers that keep them flexible. Those plasticizers migrate to the surface over time. The solvent in the Sharpie ink interacts with the plasticizer, and the ink literally bleeds into the jacket material. Within 8 to 12 weeks, according to Brady Corporation's technical bulletin on cable marking, it's illegible. You get this fuzzy purple smear where XLR 25 foot used to be.
8 to 12 weeks! So, by the time you've convinced yourself the system works, the system has already failed.
And that's under ideal conditions. If the cable's exposed to heat, sunlight, or stage lights, it's even faster. The ink fades, the plasticizer keeps migrating, and you're back to playing cable roulette.
What about paint markers? I've seen people swear by those.
Oil-based paint markers? Uniposca? Sharpie oil-based? They're better? The pigment sits on top of the jacket rather than being absorbed, so you don't get the bleeding problem. But the issue is mechanical. Paint markers create a surface layer with no real bond. On a cable that gets handled, coiled, uncoiled, stepped on, dragged across stage floors, that paint abrades off within weeks. It's not a chemical failure, it's a physics failure. The ink is just sitting there waiting to be scraped away.
Markers straight on the jacket is out. What about label makers? Everyone's got a Brother P-Touch or a Dymo sitting around.
Standard label tape on a flat flag style tag. This is the next thing people try, and it works perfectly on thick cables. Power cords, speaker cables, anything over maybe 8mm diameter. You wrap the label around itself to make a flag, and there's enough surface area for the adhesive to grip.
The prompt specifically mentions XLR to 3.5, RCA cables. Those are thin.
That's where it falls apart. A standard P-Touch label on a 3.5mm cable, the adhesive contact area is tiny. You're asking a flat adhesive to grip a curved surface with maybe 4mm of contact. Add temperature changes, which expand and contract the jacket and the label at different rates, and the label peels off. Flag labels also catch on cable ties, on other cables, on the edge of a bin. They get torn off during normal handling.
Like adopting a feral cat. It seems fine at first, and then everything goes wrong.
Actually, a surprisingly good analogy. The label seems tame, and then you come back 3 weeks later and it shredded itself and half your cable bin is covered in adhesive residue.
What's the gold standard? What do touring engineers actually use?
Heat shrink tube labels. This is the answer for anything under about 6mm diameter, and honestly, it's the answer for almost everything. Here's how it works. You get polyolefin heat shrink tubing. 2:1 or 3:1 shrink ratio. You print your label on it, slide it over the connector onto the cable, and apply heat. The tube shrinks down and conforms perfectly to the cable diameter. The label is now a permanent abrasion-resistant sleeve that's mechanically locked onto the cable.
The label is printed on the tube before you shrink it.
There are two approaches. The professional approach is a label maker that supports heat shrink cartridges. Brothers Tizay FX231 cartridge, for example, those labels are UL recognized for continuous operation at 105 degrees Celsius, and they resist oil, grease, and UV exposure. Brady's BMP21 Plus is another one. Their M21-750-499 cartridges work for cables down to 1/8 inch diameter, that's about 3.2 millimeters.
You're printing text on a flat tube, sliding it on, shrinking it, and it's permanent.
I've talked to a live sound engineer who labeled 100 XLR cables with Brother Tizay heat shrink labels. After 18 months of touring, zero labels peeled, zero faded. Compare that to a Sharpie labeled batch he'd done earlier, illegible after 3 months. That's the difference between a system and a hope.
18 months versus 12 weeks. That's not even a comparison. That's a category error.
The shrinking process is what makes it work. Polyolefin shrinks at around 90 to 110 degrees Celsius. You need a heat gun. A hairdryer won't get hot enough, don't try it. But once it's shrunk, the label is fused to the cable. It can't peel because there's no adhesive to fail. It can't slide because it's mechanically constricted. It can't fade because the print is inside the tube or thermally bonded.
What about the lower tech version? If someone doesn't want to buy a specialized label maker,
right on heat shrink. Companies like Panduit and Hellman Titan make blank adhesive-backed heat shrink tubing. You write on it with a fine-tip oil-based marker, slide it on, and shrink it. The shrinking process locks the ink under the shrunk material. It's not as crisp as a printed label, but it's vastly better than writing directly on the cable jacket. For a low-volume setup, say 20 or 30 cables, this is perfectly adequate.
The ink doesn't smear during shrinking?
If you let it dry properly before applying heat, no. The heat actually helps set the oil-based ink. The key is using an oil-based marker, not a standard Sharpie. The Sharpie ink can break down under heat. Oil-based pigment stays put.
What about these UV-cured resin markers I've seen? The ones that claim to bond to anything?
The lab marker and similar products. They're interesting. They use a UV-curable resin that you apply like a pen, then cure with a small UV light. The resin bonds chemically to the surface. They work on some cable jackets, particularly silicone and certain rubber compounds. The problem is PVC, the same plasticizer issue. The bond isn't always reliable because the surface is chemically active. I'd say they're a specialty tool for specific materials, not a general solution for audio cables. If you're working with silicone jacketed cables in a lab setting, sure. For XLRs on stage, stick with heat shrink.
We've established heat shrink is the answer for marking, but the prompt also asks about storage. A perfectly labeled cable is useless if it's tangled in a rat's nest.
This is where the system design gets interesting. The marking and the storage have to be designed together. You can't solve one and ignore the other. And the first thing to get right is coiling.
The over-under technique. I've seen people argue about this like it's a religious doctrine.
It kind of is in audio circles. Over-under coiling, where you alternate the coil direction, prevents the cable from developing memory and tangling. Standard over-over coiling introduces a twist with every loop, and over time the cable wants to spring back into that twisted shape. Over-under neutralizes the twist. It takes practice, but once you learn it, your cables last longer and deploy without knots.
You've coiled the cable properly. How do you store 50 of them?
Several approaches depending on scale. The simplest is Velcro cable ties with a label window. Velcro 1 wrap. The pre-cut 8-inch strips. They have a small loop where you can attach an adhesive label. You coil the cable, wrap the Velcro around it, and the label identifies what it is. The advantage is the tie stays with the cable. You never have to hunt for it. And Velcro is reusable, unlike zip ties, which are one-time use and can damage the jacket if you cinch them too tight.
Zip ties are the cable equivalent of a bad tattoo. Permanent and regrettable.
They require scissors to remove, which is a great way to accidentally nick the cable jacket. Velcro all the way. But the tie and label approach only works if you can see the label. If you've got 50 cables in a bin, you're still digging.
What's the next level?
Cable caddies with divided bins. Something like the Rock and Roller R12 with cable bins. Each bin holds one cable type and length. You label the bin, not just the cable. Now you can see at a glance, XLR 10 foot, XLR 25 foot, XLR to 3.5, and so on.
For the truly obsessive.
PVC pipe cut to length with end caps. Each cable gets its own tube. You label the outside of the tube. This is what broadcast engineers use. The tube protects the cable from crushing, keeps it coiled, and stacks neatly on a shelf or in a road case. You can build a rack that holds dozens of tubes. It's cheap. PVC pipe is a few dollars per 10-foot section, and it's infinitely customizable.
That's the storage equivalent of a filing cabinet for cables, which appeals to something deep in my sloth brain.
There's something deeply satisfying about pulling a labeled tube off a rack, popping the cap, and having exactly the right cable drop out. It turns cable management from a chore into a system.
What about display cables? HDMI, DisplayPort, USB, C? Those are thinner and more fragile.
Display cables are too thin for heat shrink. You can't get tubing small enough to shrink down to a 5mm HDMI cable without the tube being too narrow to fit over the connector. And they're more fragile, tight coiling can damage the internal shielding. For these, I recommend small zippered pouches. Cable Matters makes cable organizer pouches that are perfect for this. You coil the cable loosely, put it in the pouch, and label the pouch with a standard brother label. The pouch protects the cable, and the label is on a flat surface where it'll actually stick.
Heat shrink for audio cables, pouches for display cables. What about network cables? Cat 6 and similar?
Network cables are actually easier in some ways because they're thicker and more standardized. Heat shrink labels work beautifully on Cat 6. The cable diameter is usually around 6 millimeters, which is perfect for standard heat shrink tubing. And network cables benefit from a different labeling philosophy. You're labeling by location or purpose, not just length. Patch panel port 12 to Office 3 rather than Cat 6 25 foot.
Which brings us to the question of what information actually goes on the label. The prompt mentions wanting to grab cables quickly. What's the minimum viable label?
Two pieces of information, cable type and length. XLR 10 feft or XLR 3. That's it. You don't need the connector genders on the label if they're visible on the connector itself. You don't need a date or a serial number unless you're running a rental house with 50 plus cables.
The prompt specifically mentions cables with different connectors on each end. XLR to 3.5, for example. Do you label both ends?
Always label both ends. When you're reaching into a bin, you don't know which end you'll grab, and the label should say what the cable is, not what the near end is. XLR to 3.5mm 10T feet, same label on both ends. Otherwise, you're doing mental gymnastics. Okay, I'm holding the XLR end, so the other end must be, the label tells you what the whole cable is.
What about color coding? I've seen engineers use colored heat shrink or colored electrical tape near the connector.
Color coding by length is one of the most effective systems I've seen. Pick a consistent scheme. Red equals 3 feet, blue equals 6 feet, green equals 10 feet, yellow equals 25 feet. You add a colored band of heat shrink next to your printed label. Now you can identify cable length from across the room without reading a single word.
Of course there are. A whole semiotics of cable colors.
It works brilliantly. The color becomes muscle memory. You need a 10-foot XLR, you reach for green, you don't even think about it. The Audio Engineering Society survey I mentioned, the same one about lost time, found that engineers using color-coded length systems reported cable retrieval times dropping from around 45 seconds to under 10 seconds per cable.
45 seconds to 8 seconds, you said earlier.
The case study I saw was a sound engineer with 200 cables using color-coded heat shrink labels and a PVC tube rack. His retrieval time dropped from 45 seconds to 8 seconds. That's nearly an order of magnitude improvement just from system design.
You're saving 37 seconds per cable grab. Multiply that by however many cable changes happen during a show. That's real time.
Real money if you're paying crew by the hour. The system pays for itself in the first month.
Let's talk about the color scheme. If someone's building this from scratch, what colors should they use?
Keep it simple. Red, blue, green, yellow for the common lengths. 3, 6, 10, 25 feet. Add white for 50 feet, orange for specialty lengths. Print a reference card and attach it to your cable storage bin or rack. That way, anyone on your crew can learn the system in 30 seconds. The reference card is critical. Don't rely on memory, especially if you have volunteers or new crew members.
What about the QR code approach? I've heard of people printing QR codes on heat shrink labels that link to a database.
That's the advanced tier. For inventories of 50-plus cables, you can print a QR code on the heat shrink label that links to a database entry with cable type, length, test date, purchase date, and location. Tools like QR Code Monkey for generation, or paid systems like CableIQ for a full inventory management setup. You scan the code with your phone and get the full history. It's overkill for most people, but if you're running a rental operation or a large venue, it's transformative.
The cable is a managed asset, not just a thing in a bin.
And when a cable fails, which they do, you can log it, pull it from inventory, and know exactly when it was last tested. That's the difference between professional cable management and hoping for the best.
Let's circle back to something you mentioned earlier. The Brother Teaser cartridges versus the Brady system. If someone's buying a label maker specifically for cables, what's the call?
For most people, the Brother P-Touch with TZ heat shrink cartridges is the sweet spot. The TZ FX231 produces labels that are UL recognized, chemical resistant, UV resistant, everything you need. The label maker itself is $100 to $150, and the cartridges are around $20 to $30 each. One cartridge will do hundreds of cable labels. The Brady BMP21 PLUS is more industrial. It's designed for electrical and network labeling specifically. It's more expensive, around $200 to $250, but it has more label material options and the print is slightly more durable. If you're labeling cables that will be exposed to oil, solvents, or extreme temperatures, go Brady. For audio cables in normal stage and studio environments, Brother is plenty.
What about the Dymo Rhino? I've seen those in hardware stores.
The Rhino series does support heat shrink tubing, and they're perfectly fine. The print quality is good. The durability is comparable. The main difference is the label design software and the cartridge ecosystem. Brother has a wider range of heat shrink sizes. If you already own a Rhino, use it. If you're buying new, Brother gives you more flexibility.
For the write-on heat shrink approach, the low budget version, what sizes do you need?
Get an assortment. For XLR cables, you want tubing that's about a quarter inch or 6 millimeters before shrinking, with a 2-to-1 shrink ratio. That'll fit over the XLR connector and shrink down to grip the cable. For thinner cables like 3.5 millimeter or RCA, you'll want 3/16 or 3 millimeter tubing. A multi-size kit from Panduit or Hellermann Titan costs about $20 and covers most common audio cable diameters.
The heat gun. Don't use a hairdryer.
Don't use a hairdryer. A basic heat gun is $20 to $30 at any hardware store. Get one with a nozzle attachment that focuses the heat. You want to apply heat evenly around the tube, not just one side. It takes about 5 to 10 seconds per label once you get the hang of it.
Let's talk about storage for a moment. The PVC pipe solution you mentioned. How do you actually build that?
It's wonderfully simple. Get PVC pipe in 1.5 or 2 inch diameter, depending on your cable thickness. Cut it to length, about 18 inches for a coiled 25 foot XLR. Glue a cap on one end, leave the other end with a removable cap or a threaded clean out plug. Label the outside with a standard label or write directly on the PVC with a paint marker. Mount them horizontally on a rack or store them vertically in a milk crate.
The cable just slides in, coiled.
Coiled with the over-under technique, secured with a Velcro tie, then slid into the tube. The tube protects the cable from being crushed, keeps dust off, and the label on the outside means you never have to open the wrong tube. It's especially good for cables that live in road cases. The tubes prevent the cables from tangling with each other during transport.
What about the cable caddies with individual bins? Are those better for certain use cases?
Bins are better for quick access during a show. If you're constantly swapping cables, like a patch-bay setup or a pedalboard build, you want open bins you can reach into without unscrewing caps. The Rock and Roller R12 cart with divided bins is popular because it's mobile. You wheel it to where you're working. The trade-off is that cables and open bins can still tangle with each other if you're not careful with coiling.
Tubes for storage and transport. Bins for active work?
That's the pattern. A lot of engineers I've talked to use both. Tubes in the road case for transport, then they transfer the day's expected cables into bins on a cart for the show. It's an extra step, but it means cables stay organized through the entire workflow.
You mentioned Velcro One Wrap earlier. Is there a specific reason that brand keeps coming up?
Standard hook and loop cable ties, the kind that come in a roll, lose their stickiness over time. The hook side gets clogged with dust and fibers, and the loop side gets matted down. One Wrap is a different construction. The hook and loop are on the same side of the strip and is designed to be washed and reused. They don't lose grip nearly as fast. Pre-cut 8-inch strips are the right size for most audio cables.
You can label them?
The One Wrap ties have a small slot or loop at one end where you can thread a label through or stick a small adhesive label. It's not as durable as a heat shrink label on the cable itself, but it's a good secondary identifier. I always recommend labeling the cable first and using the tie label as backup.
Let's address a misconception I've seen floating around. Some people think color coding by connector type is enough. Gold connector means XLR, silver means quarter inch, whatever.
That's a trap. Connector color tells you nothing about length. A red XLR connector could be 3 feet or 50 feet, and a lot of connectors are just whatever color the manufacturer used that year. Nutrik XLR connectors come in nickel, black, and gold, and they all do the same thing. Using connector color as an identification system is like identifying cars by their paint color. It's not systematic.
What about the misconception that you can just use a label maker with standard tape on the cable jacket?
We touched on this, but it's worth emphasizing. Standard label tape adhesive fails on curved, flexible surfaces. The adhesive is designed for flat, rigid surfaces, file folders, binders, equipment panels. Put it on a cable that flexes and the adhesive bond breaks down. Within weeks, the label is peeling at the edges, then it catches on something and rips off entirely. Only wraparound or heat shrink labels work long term on cables.
Wraparound being when the label wraps completely around the cable and sticks to itself?
A wraparound label on a thicker cable, say a power cord or a heavy gauge speaker cable, can work because the label overlaps itself and the adhesive is bonding to the label material, not the cable jacket. But on thin cables, the circumference is too small for the label to wrap and stick to itself cleanly. You end up with a flag, which we've already established is problematic.
The diameter threshold is around 6 millimeters. Below that, heat shrink. Above that, you have options.
That's a good rule of thumb. 6 millimeters and under, heat shrink is the only reliable solution. Above 6 millimeters, wraparound labels can work, and flag labels become viable above about 8 millimeters.
Let's talk about the long-term maintenance of this system. You've labeled everything beautifully. 2 years later, you buy 10 new cables. How do you keep this system from degrading?
This is the discipline part. Every new cable gets labeled before it goes into storage. The moment you say, "I'll label it later," you've introduced chaos into the system. Keep the label maker and the heat shrink cartridges in the same place you store your cable supplies. Make labeling part of the unboxing process.
If a label does fail,
replace it immediately. A failed label is worse than no label because it creates ambiguity. I think this was the 25-footer. That's how you lose 30 minutes during soundcheck. Keep a small stock of blank heat shrink tubing and a marker in your cable kit for emergency relabeling.
We've covered audio cables, display cables, network cables. What about the weird ones? Optical cables, MIDI cables, BNC?
MIDI cables are similar to audio cables. 5-pin DIN connectors, cable diameter around 5 millimeters. Heat shrink labels work. BNC cables for video or word clock are thin and stiff. Heat shrink works, but be careful not to kink the cable during shrinking. Optical cables, Toslink, are the trickiest. The cable is basically plastic fiber, very thin, and the connectors are delicate. For those, I'd use the pouch method, same as display cables. Label the pouch, not the cable.
Fiber optic with LC connectors. Those are even more delicate.
That's a whole different category. LC connectors are tiny, the fiber is fragile, and the minimum bend radius is a real constraint. You can't coil fiber tightly, and you can't use heat anywhere near the connector because the epoxy that holds the fiber can degrade. For fiber, I'd say that's a topic for a future episode. The solutions are specialized enough that they deserve their own deep dive.
Let's zoom out for a moment. We've talked about markers, label makers, heat shrink, color coding, storage tubes, bins, pouches. If someone is staring at a pile of 100 unlabeled cables and feeling overwhelmed, where do they start?
Start with triage. Sort everything by connector type first. All XLRs together, all quarter inch together, all RCAs together. Then sort by length within each type. Don't try to label and sort simultaneously, you'll go insane. Sort first, then label in batches. Put on a podcast, not this one, you need to concentrate, and work through it systematically.
Sort, then label, then store.
Each phase is a separate session. Don't try to do it all in one day. Sorting is mindless but time-consuming. Labeling requires focus. Storing requires planning. Break it up.
Let's put together a shopping list. Someone wants to do this right from scratch. What are they buying?
Brother P-Touch label maker that supports TZ heat shrink cartridges. Model PTD610BT, or similar, about $120. DZ FX231 heat shrink cartridge, about $25. Heat gun, $20 to $30. Velcro 1 wrap ties, pre-cut 8-inch, pack of 50 for about $15. For storage, either a rock and roller cart with bins, about $100, or PVC pipe and end caps from a hardware store, about $30 for a basic rack. For display cables, a set of Cable Matters organizer pouches, about $15 for a 10-pack.
Total investment, somewhere between $150 and $300, depending on how elaborate you get.
That's a one-time cost that pays for itself in saved time within weeks. If you're losing 30 minutes per show to cable chaos, and you do even one show a month, that's 6 hours a year. What's your hourly rate?
More than $50 an hour, I'd hope.
The math is not subtle.
Let's address one more thing before we wrap up. It's becoming universal for audio interfaces, and every USB-C cable looks identical but has wildly different capabilities. USB 2.0, 3.2, Thunderbolt, power only, data only. How do you label for capability?
This is the next frontier of cable identification, and it's genuinely hard. A USB-C cable that carries Thunderbolt 4 looks identical to one that only carries USB 2.0. The labeling has to include the specification, not just the connector type. USB-C TB4 3-Feft versus USB-C 2.0 charge only 6-Feft. And the cable diameters are all similar, so heat shrink works, but the text has to be small. I think we're going to see a standardization push in the next few years, possibly color-coded connector overmolds mandated by the USB Implementers Forum, but for now, it's the Wild West.
The system we've described works, but you need to add the spec to your label text.
Test your cables. One of the biggest problems with USB-C is that a cable might claim to support Thunderbolt but actually doesn't, either because it's counterfeit or because it's damaged. For critical applications, test the cable with a USB-C tester. They're about $40 before labeling it. Nothing worse than labeling a cable, TB4, and finding out during a show that it's actually USB 2.0.
Trust but verify. Label but test.
The cable management motto.
We've covered a lot of ground. Let me distill this into four concrete actions. Someone can take this weekend.
Go for it.
Action 1. For any cable under 6 millimeters diameter, use heat shrink tube labels. Not flag labels, not direct marker. Invest in a label maker that supports heat shrink cartridges, Brother TZ or Brady. This is the foundation everything else builds on.
Action 2. Implement a color coding scheme for cable length. Red for 3 feet, blue for 6, green for 10, yellow for 25. Print a reference card and attach it to your storage. This alone will cut your retrieval time dramatically.
Action 3. Store cables by type and length in individual compartments or PVC tubes. Velcro ties for coiling, not zip ties. The tie stays with the cable. The tube or bin is labeled on the outside. You should never have to open something to know what's inside it.
Action 4. For display cables. HDMI, DisplayPort, USB. C. Use small zippered pouches with a label on the outside. These cables are too thin for heat shrink and too fragile for tight coiling. The pouch protects them and gives you a flat surface for the label.
If you're starting from a pile of chaos, sort first, label second, store third. Don't try to do it all at once.
One last thing on the storage front, if you're going the PVC tube route, label both ends of the tube. When they're stacked on a shelf, you might only see one end. And use a permanent marker or a paint marker on the PVC. Standard labels can peel off the curved tube surface over time.
The system degrades only if you let it. Every new cable gets labeled before it enters storage. Every failed label gets replaced immediately. The discipline is part of the system.
The system is worth it. The first time you reach into your cable storage, grab exactly the right cable in under 10 seconds, and walk to the stage without a second thought. That's when you realize you've been living with unnecessary chaos for years.
The musical equivalent of beige wallpaper, replaced by something with actual color.
That's the goal.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the early medieval period, Arab geographers widely believed in the existence of an island called Kumru, located somewhere in the Indian Ocean near Madagascar. They described it as a vast landmass populated by a people called the Kumru, who were said to have originally migrated from China. The island appeared on maps for centuries, and some accounts claimed the Kumru had conquered parts of the East African coast. Modern scholars believe Kumru was likely a conflation of Madagascar, with garbled reports of the Comoros Islands and possibly Sumatra, an entire phantom landmass born from travelers' tales stretched across two oceans.
An entire island born from a game of geographic telephone.
Madagascar's imaginary twin.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for keeping the show running, and thanks to all of you for listening. If this episode saved your cables from chaos, leave us a review on your favorite podcast app. It helps other cable-tangled humans find us. We'll be back next time with something completely different.
Until then, label your cables.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.